question sustained the assessor's valuation at about $188,000. The county has, you've represented, has asked, it has given us an appraisal at $215,000. Is there a dollar value that Mr. McIntosh is seeking today?
It's all right, Your Honor. You can go ahead and start. I did bring it back up.
Yep.
Handed to you, and it identifies on the first page there that the taxpayer, at least before the Board of Equalization, asked for $150,000 value. It sounds like they have asked for a slightly higher value here. We are asking actually for $200,000, even though our appraisal is at $215,000 for fair market value. We do want to be conscious of the uniformity issues out there, so we are only asking that it be raised to $200,000. And we believe there's a basis to do that, and we'll discuss that. I'll just have you turn to the second page because of time. Basically, that's the standard burden of proof that you're familiar with that Mr. McIntosh is going to have to establish today that there was an error, and then he's going to have to prove by sound evidentiary basis a new value. That's as it relates to his fair market value claim. And we don't believe, since he hasn't submitted an appraisal, and to our knowledge really hasn't identified where there was an error in the assessment, at a minimum the assessment retains its presumption. Now with our appraisal, I think we can agree that perhaps there was an error and that the value should be raised to $200,000. The next page addresses the equalization claim. And essentially, if the taxpayer is running both a fair market value claim and an equity claim, they're somewhat in contradiction. You usually can't really do both. We're not certain exactly what his position will be. Most of his documentation reflects that he's going to focus on an equity claim, so that's what I will emphasize here. And in doing that, we're going to assume that his property was essentially assessed at fair market value in doing that. I'll point out on the – oh, I have it going. Sorry. We'll catch up here. I'll point out with equalization that it's important for the commission to understand that you're never going to get perfect equity. There's too many properties out there. There's too many variables. So don't anticipate that everything's going to be lockstep together. So you're going to have to allow some room for differences. I will also caution the commission that equity claims should rarely be granted because the problem is that if you grant equity when equity really wasn't warranted, you actually create a greater inequality, and you almost create a ratcheting situation where you keep lowering the bar. So if you incorrectly lower this property based on equity, then you're forcing the Cache County Assessor's Office to effectively lower everybody else's property, and eventually you get this negative ratcheting effect. So equity should be rarely granted, And hopefully, given the skill that the Cache County Attorney's Assessor's Office, has, you should see very few successful claims in that regard, particularly upon, with residential property. Let me just go through the elements. The key element is that there must be an intentional and systematic undervaluation of the comparable properties. And so you're going to have to first find comparables that are assessed with the same methodology. So if they're not assessed with the same methodology, you're not going to find uniformity. In this case, it's easy because all residential property in this case will be assessed essentially with the same methodology. But you still have to find properties that are similar. And if they're not similar in location or similar in construction or size, then they're not going to be a proper comparables for the equity analysis. And I'll also point out that one of the things that's important for the commissioners to look at in equity is you need to be able to identify, if you're going to give an equity claim, you need to be able to identify to the Cache County assessor where they undervalued the property so they can fix it next year when they assess everybody else's property. So if you're unable to identify what that is, then you probably haven't met the requirements that there be an intentional and systematic undervaluation. And I think that, that makes sense. So let me just move real quickly to what we have here. And this is what we'll present in our case. And you'll see here that we have the subject and square foot, $143. And you can see that we're well within the comparables that we have located. And, in fact, we're probably a little low, and that's why we're asking that it be increased to $200,000. And I'll note that if you just take the average of the comparables we have, at the average square footage, you get to the $200,000 number. So we feel like we can, within equity, ask for that increase for this particular property. This is the taxpayers' analysis, and they're quite a bit lower, but they're using different comparables that we don't think are similar, and so their analysis fails. I'll just show you a picture here. This is the subject property. You'll see it's a fairly new home, 2004, I believe it was built. This is the taxpayers' comparable, and you'll notice that it's obviously somewhat of a different neighborhood. It's not the identical neighborhood, different street. You'll notice the utility poles out front. Again, this is their second comparable. If we go back, it's visually you can see that there's the subject. There are their two comparables. You see that there's some big differences right off the bat. And then I'll just show you the comparables that we're using. This is Equity One. Very similar, same neighborhood. And the Comp 2 and Comp 4. So they're very close. So we'll rest with that. Do you have any questions at this point?
Yes, counsel. I just want to make sure it's clear then. You're asking for a different value than the BOE value.
We are.
Okay. Don't you have the same burden of proof then because you're abandoning the BOE value?
Okay. We do. And I did notice, and I apologize, it wasn't clear,
okay,
that essentially the issue of error is sort of omitted in this case because we're submitting an appraisal here that obviously arrives at a higher fair market value than the assessed value. And so with respect to that portion of the presumption, there is error. We think we can prove by a sound evidentiary basis through our witness that there is a new value. We don't think the taxpayer can prove by a sound evidentiary basis an alternative value.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Baldwin. Carrie, you're first witness.
Yes, we would call Tyler McIntosh. So we were encouraged at points maybe to break and discuss briefly some of the things we were doing. So just briefly, the opening statements, what we're trying to do is introduce ourselves, make a first impression, and the critical thing is lay out a roadmap for the commission to follow. Talk about the issues, the evidence that we're going to put on, who's going to testify. You want to make And the legal framework, and we want to do it putting our best foot forward and make our strongest arguments first, move in that direction, and try to engage the commissioners in the conversation. We're now going to move to the direct testimony portion of it. One of the things I'd really encourage you to do is meet with your attorney before you ever testify. If you're in a proceeding with another attorney, have an outline, talk through the things you're going to talk about, address any complicated issues, talk about legal issues. You know, whatever you do, don't ever compromise your integrity issue as you move forward. And also, you're going to want to know what
you mean.
Thumbnail about where we've been and
John,
where we're headed.
Yeah. Is it appropriate for the witness to suggest questions to the attorney that they might ask?
Absolutely. Absolutely appropriate, and especially when we're dealing in an area with technical expertise, where you hold the expertise, we don't. And so we really want you to help us share that.
I'll just note, counselor, that we're skipping these swearing.
Yes.
We usually
yes.
swear in a witness as they begin their testimony. We will not do that for this mock hearing. So that.
So I can lie all I want. Yes.
You need it? We may choose to swear at the witness.
Can I swear at the attorneys then, too? No.
That only seems fair. So we talked briefly in our opening statement, Mr. McIntosh, about your background and the things you do. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
I know I have a unique educational background, but there's really nothing else I have to add to that, no.
Okay. So let me just start with a really simple and straightforward question. Do you feel like you have been treated like other similar taxpayers?
No. I think the government is a bunch of crooks, and they've taken advantage of me, and I feel that I have not, no.
Okay. Well, let's turn to what was previously marked as Exhibit 1, which comprises pages 1 through 7 and 50 and 51 of the pre-filed documents.
All right.
Can you tell the commission what these documents are?
Let's see here. So, if you look at Exhibit 50 and 51, these are just some of the comparables that we've come up with the neighbors that are next to me. Do you want me to go through those?
Well,
or
at this point, let me just ask, did you prepare these documents?
I did.
We would move admission of Exhibit 1, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No objection.
Petitioner's Exhibit 1 is received.
Okay, so let's turn to page 50. Tell us what you're trying to show with page 50.
So what I'm trying to show, obviously, if you look at page 50, All of the prices that were appraised for my property are substantially higher than any of my my neighbors, and I think that's erroneous.
Okay, no. So if we were to look at that particular exhibit and we were to move across year by year, so we've got 2009 through 2014. So if we were to go from 2009 to 2010 and then look at your property and compare it to those of the three neighbors, are the properties moving uniformly, meaning are they moving up uniformly, staying level uniformly, or is value dropping uniformly among the properties?
Well, they're all dropping, but mine is dropping very little compared to the other properties.
Okay, and with the exception of 2014, which we'll talk about in a minute, would that be the same for all of those years?
Yes.
And so the properties don't seem to be moving uniformly with the market.
No, they don't.
In the past years.
No.
Okay, let's talk about the value changes from 2013 to 2014 with all four of these properties. So what happens with your property from 2013 to 2014?
So 2013, mine went up about $6,000. And then the other properties, if you look at neighbor two and neighbor three, they went up about $1,000.
Okay, and if we were to put just a factor, what happens with, tell us what the factor would be with the changes in the property. So that would be page three, line 13.
Page three. Where am I at? Hold on one sec. Line 13. I don't see line 13. Oh. So myself is 1.03. Is that what you're wanting?
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. Neighbor one is 1.028. Neighbor two, 1.02. And neighbor three is the same as well.
Okay. And so, what would happen if we applied the factor increases for properties numbers 1, 2, and 3 from 2013 to 2014 to your property?
It would drop.
And I believe that you actually transposed your property with neighbor 1.
I did.
Look at that again. Is that correct?
Correct.
So you went up 1.028?
Correct.
Okay, and so you have your property has been raised a significant amount compared to the other properties between 2013 and 2014.
It has.
And we heard in the opening that the assessor is presenting an appraisal for $215,000. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard it.
Okay, so if we took your the increase in your property from the 2013 assessed value to the 2014 value that the assessor wants the tax commission to add, what is the dollar increase?
$27,000.
And what is the factor increase?
1.176.
Okay, and if we took that 1.76 factor and applied it to your three neighbor properties, what happens to their values?
Neighbor one would go up to 186,446.
Okay.
Neighbor two would be 207,805, and then neighbor three would be 222,469.
Okay. So, if that factor were applied, there would be very significant increases on all of those three.
On all three properties.
Thank you. Let's shift now from our discussion on uniformity, and let's talk about fair market value.
Okay.
What year was your house built?
2004.
And my understanding is it was built by a contractor.
It was.
How much did you pay for the house and the lot?
$150,000.
Okay, and what has happened to the real estate market in your area in the past 6 to 7 years? I mean, hasn't it been horrible? Hasn't it been the biggest nightmare for homeowners and investors?
Objection leader.
In our lifetime?
Yeah, I haven't seen it this bad ever.
So the market has crashed
substantially.
I would like to know for the record the council is leading the way.
Wondered about that objection.
I was looking for that.
I won't ask the commission to rule. Give it.
I'll stipulate. based on the crash in the market, has your house really appreciated as much as the assessor says it is in the past decade?
No, not even.
I mean, it seems that this is a really significant allegation you're making here that runs counter to the market. Is that your experience?
Yeah.
Let's talk about some comparable properties that you have relied on. Let me have you turn to document page 16. property 0018.
Okay.
Tell us why you believe this is a comparable property.
Let's see. This is the right one. Okay. So the square footage is very close, and the sale price was also very close. The year it was built.
Let me just stop you there. So let's now go to page 17.
Okay.
Let me have you.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
Have you look at that property 0136 and tell us why that property is comparable?
Yeah, Scratch Farm Works on the last one. The year built on the last one was not the same. Mm-hmm. This one, it's the same year built.
Okay, and how about the sales price?
Sales price is very similar as well.
Okay, let me have you turn to page 18. This property 0017. Tell us why these properties are comparable.
Also, the list price is very comparable here, and square footage.
Okay, and let's turn to page 19 and explain to the commission why that property is comparable.
This one here, the sold price is very comparable.
Okay, and based on your experience, and you've had significant experience in real estate and property, these properties support a correct fair market value?
It's like a Bates number.
Yes.
What do you believe the fair market value is?
150,000.
Okay. And I know we talked earlier, and I think you mentioned that it was a range between 150 and 165.
Correct.
Correct.
But okay. 150 would be preferred.
Why do you think the assessor has it valued so high?
Because the assessor hates me and doesn't like me.
Do you think you're being punished because you filed an appeal?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well let's just talk a little bit about that. Has the assessor ever said anything to you about the appeals that you filed?
Yes, I've gotten to know the clerk in the assessor's office over the years. And he told me last year when I went to pay my property taxes that the assessor said she would put an end to my appeals.
Okay, so put an end to your appeals.
Yeah.
So you're not to appeal anymore, even if you have a constitutional right and even if the assessor got it wrong.
Correct.
We have nothing further.
I have a question. I have a question.
I have a quick question, though,
for Mr. McIntosh.
Mr. McIntosh, are you a licensed real estate appraiser, or do you have any certification to be a certified real estate appraiser?
Yes, I do.
And which state is that issued from?
The state of Utah.
And is it active?
Sure.
Are you offering an opinion of value in this case?
Yes, I am.
Have you complied with all requirements of USPAP in issuing that opinion of value?
I have.
And have you prepared a written report in compliance with USPAP?
No.
What is your understanding? What is your understanding,
John,
of the value standard for property tax purposes in the state of Utah?
I don't know.
Are you familiar with the willing buyer and a willing seller requirement?
Yes, yes.
In this case, would you be a willing seller of your home for $150,000?
No.
Let me have you turn to your fair market evaluations. You turn first to page 16, and you identified this property as the comparable. Is that correct?
Yes.
But this is located in Smithfield, right? Is your home located in Hyde Park?
Yeah, my home is located in Hyde Park.
Why did you not choose a comparable located within Hyde Park?
Smithfield's about a mile and a half out of from my house, so I thought it would be okay.
All right. And this is slightly smaller than your home, right? Yours is 1,300 square feet up. And
correct. Yep.
And this was built in 1962, and yours was built in 2004.
That's why I'm missing it.
Yes.
Let me have you turn to the next comparable on page 17.
Okay.
Does your home have a basement?
My home, yes, it does have a basement.
Does this comparable have a basement?
No.
And can you tell me where this home is located?
This is located in Logan.
And what part of Logan?
Cache County.
All right, I'll represent that this is on the south side of Logan, and your home is in Hyde Park, which would be on what side of Logan? North?
North side.
All right, let me have you turn to comparable 18.
Okay.
What year was that home built?
1917.
Okay.
But the effective year built is 2008.
Okay. And do you consider that little add-on garage to the left to be comparable to your garage?
It is a little smaller, but.
Yeah. Okay. Let me have you turn to 19. And
okay.
When was that home built?
1977.
And your home was built in 2004?
Correct.
And is this home considerably smaller than yours as well?
Yeah, it is about 300 square feet smaller.
Okay. Well, let me have you turn to your exhibit where you talked about for equity purposes. You had three comparables for equity. Is that correct?
Which exhibit?
51.
50?
And 50.
51. Okay. Yeah.
51. Let's turn to 51.
The graph.
There.
One more. Oh.
I do it? Can I do it with my finger?
Is that one? Okay.
Oof.
Okay. I don't know how to change the view here, but your home is the blue one. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is.
Okay. And the other two are, depending on the year, lower?
Correct.
Are any of these on the same street as your home?
No.
Okay. I have no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Before Mr. Bogley does his redirect, the commission usually takes this time as an opportunity to ask questions. Commissioners, any questions?
I'd like to ask one.
Commission Chair.
Mr. McIntosh? Do you own the property?
I do own the property.
Who is Chris Lyman?
He is
the real property owner. We have chosen not to.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
So you don't own the property. Chris Lyman owns the property.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So we don't have the real party in interest here before us. All we have is we have a representative without a power of attorney?
Well, he's pretending to be the property owner.
Well, he's pretending to be Mr. Lyman, not Mr. McIntosh.
We'll pretend that he's bold for this year.
Okay. That would be a normal procedural question I would ask.
Two and one.
Okay. So Mr. Lyman and Mr. McIntosh are one and the same people.
Yes.
It's an alias.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Bodley. Counsel, you can tell me if we need to answer this at a different time, but I wanted to examine Mr. Bodley's line of questioning on Mr. McIntosh's valuation. I know that the Supreme Court has said that a property owner has an absolute right to give an opinion of value, whether they're licensed or not.
That's correct.
So if the property owner also happens to be a licensed appraiser, are they subject to USPAP, or as the property owner, can they speak and give their opinion of value without complying with USPAP?
You know, that's an excellent question, Your Honor, and one that we were going to avoid. We didn't have enough time to brief on. It's part of the written stuff.
Okay.
That he's not, he is not licensed, so we didn't have to deal with the USPAP.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Any other questions? Mr.
Kay. Yes, just a couple of questions. And I want you to listen carefully. These are very important questions. would you sell your property for $165,000?
Yes, I would.
Now, Mr. Bodley pointed out a comparable that he said was higher, but it hasn't been assessed at that value, has it?
It has not.
We went back to your exhibit and applied the 1.17 factor that you get to with the $215,000.
Spit it out. Spit it out.
$215,000
appraisal
factor, and with the assessed value, you end up with a value that is significantly higher. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars higher, aren't we?
Correct. Yes.
We have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McIntosh, I assume.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Cache County will call Kim Jones. Ms. Jones, can you please state and spell your name for the record, please?
My name is Kimberly Jones, Kimberlee, Jones.
Okay, and for the reason, why do we ask that? Do we need to? Not necessarily if she gives the complete name to them, but sometimes if you're just sending this record out to be transcribed, that can be the official record to the Utah Supreme Court, and so it's pleasant to have your name spelled correctly. Going to be publicly recorded that way. So that's why we sometimes do that. So anyway, thank you. Can you please tell me what your current employment position is?
I currently work for the Cache County Assessor's Office.
And have you been asked to prepare an appraisal in this matter?
Yes.
And did you prepare an appraisal?
Yes.
Let me get a little bit of background. How long have you been employed in that position?
Almost 14 years.
And what have been your responsibilities?
I'm involved in reappraising residential properties. I also help reappraise land, vacant land, and land encumbered by properties, and some commercial.
And what are your appraisal designations, or do you have any?
Yes, I'm a certified residential appraiser. I am FHA approved, and I have my ad valorem designation as a general real property appraiser.
And is that licensed with the state of Utah?
Yes.
Is it current?
Yes.
And what are your general training requirements to maintain that license?
To maintain our license, we're required to have 28 hours every year, every renewal cycle, which is 2 years plus USPAP, or that includes USPAP, doesn't it? Currently, I average about 100 hours of continuing education a year, though, so I far exceed what is required.
And are you familiar with the real estate market in Cache County, particularly in this area in Hyde Park?
Yes. I actually live and work in Cache County.
Okay. And let me have you turn to your appraisal. And I believe it starts... place my one with the Bates numbering, but I think we can find it starting on page 27. And I can actually get there. eventually. This is the back part of your appraisal, but can you identify for me the value you arrived at for this property?
I came up with an opinion of value of $215,000.
And based upon the information you've heard today, do you still believe that's an appropriate opinion of value?
Yes.
And as of what date is that opinion of value for?
The effective date is January 1 of 2014.
Okay. And how did you arrive at that value? What method did you employ?
I employed a market approach, I employed a cost approach, and then the income approach was considered, but it was not considered applicable.
And which method did you give most reliance on?
That would be the sales comparison approach.
Okay. And briefly explain to me how you performed that approach and the comparables that you used.
Well, I searched for comparable properties with sales date occurring prior to the lien date. That would be comparable in age, quality, condition, and gross living area.
Okay. And for the interest of time, on page 28, is that where you begin your comparison?
Yes.
And so you have comparable 1, 2, 3, and then ultimately you have...
there's a fourth comparable.
Comparable 4. And you've made various adjustments based on size, age,
yes.
And what other adjustments would you make?
Seller paid concessions were adjusted for. Gross living area was adjusted for. Basement area and basement finish was adjusted. And then there were various other small adjustments concerning decks, fireplaces, and personal property that was included in the comparable sales.
And you also... compared some listings that were active at that time as well, right?
Yes.
And if I can have you turn to the last part of your appraisal.
The location map?
Location. And is this where they're located? Can you just kind of describe to the commissioners?
Yes. The comparable sales are in, well, I don't know if you have colors. Comparable sales are listed and the listings.
So the dark would be the sales.
Yes.
Right, and the subject right here.
Yes, the subject is right there.
And then these would be the listings that are also very close.
Yes.
All right.
And it gives the mileage away from the subject right there.
And so your opinion of value, again, for the fair market value of this property as of January 1, 2014, for property tax purposes would be?
My opinion is $215,000.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Jones.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Truth be known.
Let me have you turn to numbered page 27 of your appraisal.
That would be which page?
Page 27. It's the mock formal hearing number in the bottom right-hand corner.
Mine aren't numbered.
Okay. So it's the beginning of your appraisal.
Okay.
So you've got a table of contents with a picture. Turn back to the next page from there.
Okay.
If I drop down three lines, there's a line there that says special assessment.
Yes.
It says zero.
Yes.
Haven't you really made a $27,000 special assessment
against no.
Mr. McIntosh? That's really what it looks like.
No.
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 Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about your appraisal. Let's talk about comparable number 4. So when I look at your analysis on the next page of your appraisal, you list 3 comparables.
Mm-hmm.
But comparable 4 doesn't end up in your appraisal.
Yes, it is part of my appraisal. It is included in the...
it's not in the analysis.
It is. It's just printed on the separate page. You can only fit 3 on the one page.
Okay. And did you rely on any of the comparable properties presented by the taxpayer? Yes or no, please.
No. I picked my own.
Yes or no?
No.
I'd like to ask you just some general appraisal questions. Is a brick facade
more valuable to the seller than consigning?
Most of the comparables have some.
Now stop. My question is brick?
It can be. It depends. It depends.
It depends?
Yes.
all other things being equal,
it depends.
Hypothetical. I've got a brand new home. One is brick, quality brick. One is quality siding.
Well, you're.
Yes or no?
It depends on the quality.
Well, and the hypothetical was, though, that they're both high quality.
Okay, so is one wood siding or is one composite siding? Okay. It depends on your marketplace, actually, and what's acceptable in that market.
You work in cash.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes.
And all things being considered in Cash Valley, will a brick home identical to one of the vinyl siding bring that price?
If it's a Foley brick home, it may.
Okay. Are properties in Cache Valley generally that are south of Hyde Park, so we're moving closer to Logan, more valuable, all things being considered?
No.
Okay. All things being equal, if I'm a university professor,
mm-hmm.
Not going to make a difference.
The homes closest to the university used for rentals will get more.
Okay.
You've got your hillside that may get more. But we've found in our market the outlying areas, we like our space.
Okay, so talking about closer to the foothill, so would a property closer to the mountains and further from the freeway in the industrial and business district bring a higher price?
Further, so up on the east bench?
Yeah, let's just say it's up on,
yes.
Up on the bench. It's away from Main Street, all the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
In Main
the
Street,
east bench
it's
would.
Away from the freeway, which is, you know, we're now on 89. We're away from all of that. We're up on the bench.
The bench has a view.
Okay. Let's look at your appraisal. Did you make any adjustments for brick siding versus vinyl siding?
No, I did not.
Well, if we look at the pictures in your appraisal, you're comparing the taxpayer to two brick homes, and theirs is mainly vinyl. There's a little bit of a brick trim on the front, the back, and half of it is vinyl.
My four comparable sales have vinyl siding.
My question, though, was, did you make an adjustment?
No. It wasn't warranted.
Now, aren't some of these properties further away from the industrial area that you use as comparable than the one that
these comparables are closer to the subject.
The question is, aren't some of them further? Take a look at those. You've got a map.
Two blocks.
Two blocks to make a world I have no further.
You're badgering the witness.
I just have one redirect, and I'll just do it from here if that's okay, commissioners. Can you explain to the commissioners why you did not make an adjustment for the brick facade?
The subject has a partial brick facade. The comparables all have a combination of a brick facade plus vinyl siding. And that doesn't warrant any adjustment.
Could I just point out something that became obvious as you're watching this. When you're answering cross-examination questions, just ask what they answer what they ask you, and then your attorney will have a chance to ask a redirect question if you want to explain more. John was cutting her off. Usually that doesn't happen, but he was cutting her off just to illustrate that point, that
yeah.
all we want answered is the question that we've asked, and then somebody else will throw you a lifeline and give you a chance to explain
yeah.
more.
Last pound of sand around Mr. McIntosh's ankle. You know, at this point.
I hope you got your fee up front.
Okay, thank you.
Am I done? Judge, I do have a question. Thank you. The taxpayer testified to statements and actions with the assessor's office. I wanted to ask you about that. To your knowledge, has the taxpayer filed several appeals over several years?
I don't have any knowledge of that.
Okay. Are you aware of any statement having been made from the assessor's office, we are going to shut down your appeals?
No, we're always very open to talking to taxpayers.
Okay. And it's the truth! And did you have an opportunity to meet with the taxpayer in advance and try to see if you could address some of those questions?
I did not personally. I did the inspection when they decided that they needed a full appraisal done.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Jones.
Thank you. Yes, the Cache County calls Gerald Osborne. And I don't know if it's possible, Chris, that we could switch to the document. Looks like this. Gerald, can you please state your name for the record, please?
Gerald Osborne.
And explain to the commission what your role is with the Cache County Assessor's Office.
I am an appraiser for Cache County, and I've worked there for about 15 years.
Are you familiar with the assessment process for residential homes by
yes.
Cache County Assessor?
Yes, I am.
Please make sure you wait till I finish my question so that the recorder can hear us both speak. I'll try to
okay.
be quickly.
Okay.
And that is important, by the way, because if he speaks over my question, then you don't hear either of it. So I'll try to be quick when I speak. Are you familiar with the property in this case?
Yes, I am.
And are you familiar with how it was assessed by the Cache County assessors?
Yes.
And have you found any error or mistake in that assessment?
The only thing that we have discovered through this process is looking at this property more closely is that the basement finish that we should really add on to that. We were unaware that it was finished.
So you had it on your records as an unfinished basement?
That is correct.
And what is the reality of that basement?
The reality of it is that it would add value to the property.
Is the basement finished in actuality?
Yes.
And let me have you turn to this exhibit here. You can see it here. Did you prepare this document?
Yes, I did.
And does it reflect the comparables that you looked at with respect to Mr. McIntyre's equity claim?
That is correct.
And so the subject is lot 5?
Yes.
Blue?
Yes.
And why do you think these properties are comparable?
What I looked at is I looked at the style, I looked at year built, and also I looked at square footage in determining what would be comparable to the subject.
Okay. And let me have you turn to the next page. And this is where you summarize the size and the year built and the assessments, right?
That is correct.
What causes variations in the assessments typically?
Typically, just added features, or maybe there could be maybe a higher quality. They may also have detached structures that would add value to the property. that maybe isn't apparent from the street.
And let me have you turn to the next page. And this is a graph. Did you prepare that as well?
That is correct.
And explain real quickly to the commission what this represents.
This represents kind of a timeline of value from 2009 to 2014.
And so the subject, again, is which line?
It would be the blue line, which follows the red line until year 2012, and then it dips down below all the other comparables.
And so it's actually below the values of its neighbors.
That is correct.
And is part of that reason potentially because of the basement issue that you missed?
That's what we believe.
Okay. And let me have you turn to the next exhibits, and we'll just go through these real quickly. These are the homes that you've looked at, right? This is one that you chose not to be a comparable, is that correct?
Yes, it was further away, and it was had some elaborate landscaping in the back.
Okay. And this is one that you did choose?
That's correct.
And then this is one you did not, and why is that?
There's a bonus room. It's really probably would be not considered a rambler. It would be a little different style home, and also had a detached shop.
And this one you did choose as a comparable?
Yeah, I compared that. It was next door, so I thought it'd be important just to show that. Although it does have some enhancements with the additional garage, and
okay, and then this is the subject. And this is the corner lot. The corner lots, are they assessed generally the same as a non-corner lot?
In some cases, they're a little bit more just because the acreage tends to be higher on them.
Okay. And so based upon the evidence that you've heard today, do you feel like the value of $200,000 that's been represented by Cache County would be an appropriate uniform value for this taxpayer in 2014?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. McCarrick.
There was a gleam in his eye.
Good, good morning. How are you today?
Right now, I'm good.
Was there any factoring or value adjustments to properties in Cache County for 2014?
Yes, there was.
Well, you did increase Mr. McIntosh's property by $27,000, even though you'd already made that adjustment, didn't you? Simple question, yes or no?
So you're stating $27,000? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Even though it had already been adjusted once by the county this year.
And so could you restate your question?
So the question is, you raised the value by $27,000 even though Cache County has already made adjustments.
Yeah, we're suggesting that, yes. I guess it's all relative, but yes, yes. Yes.
No further questions. Thank you.
I have.
Let's see if the commissioners have a question.
Thank you, Assessor. Thank you for being here today. Just want to go back to this statement that was made. To your knowledge, has the taxpayer done a lot of appeals over the last several years?
Yes, I've been involved in a number of them, yes.
Several appeals with this taxpayer?
With this tax? Oh, I thought you just meant in general. I have not personally, no.
Okay. So do you have any knowledge of his testimony that there was a statement made, I understood, by the assessor or the assessor's office, we are going to shut down your appeals?
I am not aware of that. When he stated that, in my working on this property, I've talked to several people in our office, and that was never conveyed to me or talked about.
Okay, thank you. What about the interior of the subject property? There's been a lot of discussion about the outside and brick and siding and items like that. Have you been able to have access to the interior of the home?
Yes, I went with the appraiser who appraised the property on the inspection, and I was able to inspect not only the exterior but also the interior of the home.
Okay, so the taxpayer did cooperate and give you access to the home.
Yeah, Mr. McIntosh was not there, but his wife, Mrs. McIntosh, was.
Okay, thank you. What about the interior, though? How similar is the interior of the subject to the interior of the comparables in the appraisal?
Really, it was very typical for the quality of the exterior of the home inside, and I did not see anything that was, you know, that would detract from the value or that we should add to the value based on the quality of the home.
Okay, thank you. And did you have an opportunity to meet with the taxpayer in advance of the hearing and see if there were any opportunities to discuss and talk? Or
there, prior to the local Board of Equalization, we did meet with Mr. McIntosh and tried to go through some of the information and explain it to him. But he chose to move forward with his appeal, and we encouraged him because he could not agree with us on a value.
Great. Thank you so much.
I want to focus on one issue at this time, and that is the basement. It seems like that you did not have that on the tax rolls before, that when you then found that you had the basement on the tax rolls, you then have that additional value. Is that really what has happened here?
Well, we have not at this point in time added the additional value, but based on our appraisal and then getting a interior inspection, we discovered the basement was finished, and so through this appeal process, it is proposed that we add that value to the property.
Is that value part of the $200,000 value that
yes.
you're now proposing?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Commissioner?
I have no further questions on redirect.
Okay. Any other witnesses?
No other witness, Your Honor.
Due to time, I think we ought to probably just go ahead and terminate the mock session and go through analysis of the mock session. Commissioner Pirro, this is still your session.
I agree. So the next step would be you'd give closing remarks, right?
And in those...
We are taking closing remarks today. The hearing is over.
That's correct. Thank you.
We really thank you.
One thing we didn't do was get her appraisal into evidence.
Right.
Should have been offered.
Should have been offered and accepted. After the hearing, then the commission will review the evidence and make a decision, and that decision will be issued and mailed to the parties. Parties would then have a chance to ask for reconsideration if they felt there was a mistake of law or fact. Also, either party could appeal that further, either to district court, or they could file an appeal straight to the Utah Supreme Court. The district court, if it was filed there, would be a trial de novo. To the Supreme Court, it would be a review of the commission's decision. A trial de novo means you just make the arguments again, and the district court would make a decision based on the new trial.
two items I'd like to add really quickly. One of the items that happens if you end up having someone from your county attorney's office represent you at the formal hearing is that it does give us an opportunity as commissioners to ask a few more questions about the law. We can get a little bit more deeply involved in some questions of the law. And one of the questions I'd wanted to ask a question of law to Mr. Bodily. We wouldn't necessarily do that with you as the assessor, but if you do a closing statement at the formal, we still have a right to ask you questions at your closing statement. So I just want to make sure that's really clear. One item, you heard the feedback about if you're asked a question, do yes or no, and then if you have an attorney, they'll make sure you have an opportunity to do that rebuttal. One item just to keep in mind, if it's a particularly long hearing, this would be really true, but our minds can wander up here. I just want to make sure it's clear to you. We really do try to stay focused and listening, but at the same time, we're up here taking notes, we're over here looking at the information, and we're writing down things that are questions in our mind that we want to ask. And one thought is that when you're answering a question, when you answer it to the council, you're not speaking to us. And one of the items that helps us keep our attention is when we can have eye contact with you. So when I ask a question, I get more direct eye contact. So you're going to have to take that direction from your council if that's who's directing you on that. But it's just something to keep in mind that if the council has asked you a question and it's going to be a longer answer, you can look at us because you're giving us the information. So that's just some information that might be helpful to you.
I'd like to also, let me point out, and then we'll come to your question. To have an attorney for both sides on a residential home is a very odd hearing for the commission. So many times you'll be in these hearings without an attorney even for you, much less the taxpayer, have an attorney. And so all this procedure we went through today, you don't necessarily need to know it. Civil procedure as a non-attorney will direct the hearing up here for it to proceed.
I have two different sets of questions. One is more to Commissioner Dixon. You had asked both of the witnesses from Cache County about kind of your line of questioning is, are they a frequent flyer? Have they appealed a number of times? Is that statement? Are you just asking that so that they can get it out there, or does that come into your deliberation at all? I guess if it was directly asked, I wouldn't lie, but yeah, I make statements sometimes about, oh, I'm so tired of this guy. But if that comes into this hearing, does that
And that's an excellent question. One was I was just trying to find some questions I could ask. Do you know? In all honesty, I was just seeking a way to try to engage and do some dialogue on that way, and that one stuck out. And the answer would be, from my perspective, would be no, in that we're really focused on the facts. I mean, we're asking about interior and basements and items like that. On another item is if the witness brings up a question or it's a testimony, I mean, if the attorney asks a question and then there's testimony about it, I just also did want to make you aware that is an element we can ask a question about. So I also wanted to make you aware that it could happen. We have had hearings where the taxpayer has made similar accusations against the county, and in those situations, we really spend a lot more time trying to say, we just want to get to the facts. You know, can you describe this property for me? And actually are trying to be respectful of the taxpayer and maybe their frustration and anger, but help direct them to this is what we really want to know. So that, I mean, it's an excellent question, and thank you for that.
Could I comment on that before you go to your next question? This kind of underscores what Commissioner Dixon was just saying right there at the end. A lot of times taxpayers feel like that, like Mr. McCary said in his opening statement, that it's the county employees talking to the county decision maker and so on. We want to help property owners and taxpayers feel like they're getting a fair hearing, that we heard what they're talking about. And so those kinds of questions would, we hope, communicate that to the taxpayer. But in the end, we're looking at the law and the facts when we deliberate and we make a decision based on what we see.
And thank you for adding that, because that's exactly what I was looking to do, was see if there was a way to give some perspective to it, and exactly see if the taxpayer could be heard. And those are tricky items for us as commissioners.
And then my next question is maybe to Krista or something. Last time I was here, we had to bring the big exhibits and put them up, and it was all the hard copies. So is this something that is available now? And if I send my stuff to appeals, Katie will put it in, and Krista will act when we come up, or the technical part of it if we have a hearing?
Can I take a stab at answering part of that? Would that be okay? And I'll just get it started on that, because all my fellow commissioners might have something to add on that. Yes, this is available if the hearing's in this room. It's not in our other hearing room, so that's the item. And it's not necessarily that if it's a residential hearing that you'll be in this room. So one item is, if you think you want to use this and it's going to be important to you, then you would need to make that request of that. Okay, that's the first thing. And as always, do that by that taxappeals@utah.gov. The other item is that we will make available to you to come in this room and do the training. Our AGs and county officials have come in and from Salt Lake County and done the training. So if you say, I'm going to be up there on a Friday afternoon, can I come in and have some training on how to use this? We'll try to accommodate you on that. What we're trying not to do is send the message that our staff will be here to manage the equipment for you. But yes, on that. Is there, do you want more information on that? But, right. That's a good question, and we'd have to think through that. You're not giving your room till you arrive here. The clerk running the hearing rooms will make that decision, and that's why you've got to put that request in. So you could call in advance and say, I just want to know, is there any other conflicting hearing on that? And the other item, I think our AGs might know a little bit more about this, my fellow commissioners have a lot of experience with this too, but you have to bring your equipment and connect it in, so it would come from your laptop connecting in. Okay.
I have a couple questions. One is, I always wonder when I come and I'm in a hearing, how, I realize you folks know the law. You know typically what we're talking about. I never know if I'm going into too much detail or if I need to do more. And I even wondered, as Mr. Bodley was going through the cells, and he said, cell number one was built in this year at this location. He's not saying to you or to anyone, you recognize that 40 years older? I mean, he's not, but he's pointing out, we recognize what he's doing, but I never know how much we need to tell. There's my first question. My second one is, when we send in our mountains of paperwork to you folks, I always feel like when we get in the hearing, not only are we shuffling through papers, the appellant is shuffling through papers, and you're shuffling through papers, and none of us know where anything is.
So then we say, well, let's have them make another copy. And I felt like the last hearing, that's what we were doing the whole hearing. No one's called. I'm just wondering, how's the best way for us to do that for you and for them and for all of us?
I spent the last 39 years doing exactly that as a tax attorney and a trial attorney. The best thing that I have ever done was to come up with trial notebooks, which is a notebook I gave to the judge, notebook I gave to composing counsel, notebook that I had myself, which had all my exhibits in the order that I intended to present them. Now, sometimes as the trial proceeded, they got out of order a little bit because there was something that was really appropriate to get in right now because a witness had said something that was just really off the wall. But that really helps. And I know that we're in the age of electronics and that we would really like to have everything electronic, and we'll probably end up there someday. But for now, trial notebooks on a complicated case that has a lot of exhibits in it really does help. It helps the bench and it helps counsel. I don't know, Mr. McCary or Mr. Bodley, you may want to talk about that.
I think what we try to do is on the smaller cases or opposing party doesn't have counsel, we'll number everything or prepare it and we'll submit it all so we're all working off the same set of documents. And then when we're dealing with counsel, we do just what Commissioner Valentine said. What we're trying to do is stipulate to admission of documents and order presentation, all those things, because it makes it flow so much easier. And even if, you know, if someone wants to make an argument, I think we find it really gets gum the hearing up. It just doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
It's so much faster if they could do just as what John has said, which is, okay, we can stipulate that these documents will all be entered by stipulation. We don't have to go through foundation on all of these. We all recognize these are appropriate documents. Half the time they're from the public record. So let's get all those in there, and those that we do have some objections to, or that we have some foundational issues on, or we want to challenge the quality of the appraiser or his certifications, yeah, we'll fight on those. But on the vast bulk of them, let's see if we can streamline those, get those all in, and all have the same page numbering. We try to do what is called a Bates system, which is to have the numbers just all the way through. But even we didn't get all of the Bates numbering up here. The judge Chapman had the Bates system. I didn't. Commissioner Perro didn't. I think Commissioner Dixon ended up with a Bates copy. So we were shuffling around a little bit ourselves today. The gut's an excellent question, though.
And then you saw that Tim had a backup. When the slideshow wasn't working when he started, he had a backup. And so that's very helpful that if everybody's shuffling papers and we can't find it, but you have a notebook that says, here's everything I want to talk about, and there's a copy for all of us. There's no shuffling, no making extra copies, so on.
I told CJ the first week I was in here, and I was making a presentation to a group. I said, okay, I want a hard copy and electronic copy, and I want a copy on a jump drive. And she goes, why do you need all those copies? I said, because I've been in court for too many times when one of them didn't work. So same thing applies here.
Can I go back to the first question that you had, Assessor? And I'll just get it started because there might be other opinions, especially I'd like to hear from the judge on this one as well. But it's not just the formal hearing that you're talking about, too. It's the initial hearings, correct? One of the items... we recognize that these taxpayers are your constituents, and you have a lot more experience in it, and you see a lot more, and you hear a lot more, and you have a lot more training than them. So one item maybe to keep in mind is that when you're going through the detail, you're also helping your constituent follow along with your reasoning. So you're presenting to us, but at the same time, you're trying to maintain that relationship with that property owner and constituent. What helps is if you can really help point us to what you really want us to understand. We're going to read all the material. We're going to go through it. We're going to put post-it notes on it. We're going to highlight it. We will be prepared before we come into the hearing, and we try to come prepared for questions. So, and to be honest with you, that's one of the benefits of sometimes having counsel when you come to these big formal hearings, is because they're a little more familiar with, how do I get to what I want to drive home to the commission and get down to some basic items? So that I don't know if that helps you, but if there's something really you want to point out, if you're saying, I want to focus for a minute on the quality of the comparables, I want to focus on the age, let me get down to this, then it really helps us do that. And one of the items that I think Mr. Bodily in particular has been very good at, and you might want to take a lesson from his book on, is that as long as you exchange it with the other side, like his opening statement and PowerPoints, you can provide that to us as a commission and provide it to the taxpayer in your 10-day exchange on that. So that helps us follow where you're going and helps us write notes, and then we can see, okay, this is where they're going, this is where they're trying to get us to focus on that. So those are just some items on that.
I have another one. You mentioned the 10-day exchange. Oftentimes with a citizen, that doesn't happen. And we find ourselves here at a formal hearing where we've given them our information, but we do not have anything from their side. So when they start presenting, we have no way to respond to it. It's a little awkward when we object to that being added. Again, there are constituents. We're after the right market value. For us to say, no, we're not going to let you look at that, that's a little uncomfortable as well. So when we're asked, will you let it be part of this? Well, sure, go ahead and add it. And that's how you feel. But I've also had, so with a regular citizen, I understand that. But I have had two hearings with tax reps where the information is coming to me via fax the night before. And I'm not able to prepare and be able to respond by the day I come to the formal hearing. We have many cases, and I can only speak for Cache County, where, and it's typically with tax reps, where they are presenting minimal evidence at the local hearing, not caring that they win the local hearing. Their intent is to get to the state, and it gives them more time. And at that point in time, they'll present more evidence. If we have no evidence, if we have nothing to be able to prepare, that makes it extremely difficult. I don't know how we resolve that problem, because I believe the 10 days is merely a recommendation. It is not a law. It's not something that if they don't present the evidence 10 days before, we toss it out kind of notion. I don't know. Maybe you can respond to that.
Go ahead.
We do get a lot of hearings where the taxpayer shows up. We've never spoken to them. They've never spoken to us. We send out the notice that tells the party somewhere down in the notice. It might be on the bottom of the first page, maybe on the second page, to exchange evidence with the other party within 10 days. Many taxpayers, this is the first time they've ever done an appeal. They haven't read that or didn't register with them. When they get here, if the county hasn't seen the evidence, then of course they don't bring copies either, so we have to stop to make copies. But usually in those instances, so for these taxpayers, if the county were to object to the evidence being received, ordinarily for a taxpayer like that, the commission, the ALJ or the commission, usually lets the evidence in, but will give the county 10 days to submit a written response. So that they would have an opportunity to look at the evidence in more detail and then provide evidence that you think some sort of rebuttal about that, if you thought it's appropriate. For a tax rep, that might be different. If you objected and told why you thought this person was aware of the 10 days but chose not to do it, the ALJ or the commissioners would have to consider that fact when they made their decision whether to accept that evidence.
I have one other item on that. You know, when you go to the because when we go out to the rural counties, it's usually the commissioner going. So it's a little bit different for Salt Lake County, who comes here and there before an administrative law judge, or Weber County, I believe, comes here for their initial hearings. Is that correct? Assessor, you, what's that? The ALJ comes up, but okay, along the Wasatch Front, the ALJ is going out. But as commissioners, I think that there is sometimes a sense that the taxpayer isn't involved in this process as much as the rest of you are. But I will share that this year I actually did not accept the evidence. And, but as the assessor knows, I didn't accept it from both sides. And I just took the information being proffered. I just said they can both verbally do it. I'll take the information at that point. And it was a tough call I made at that point. But I just decided to make the call at that point. And, the information was just so factual and I'll be honest, the assessor did a good job presenting, just going down the line, just saying, boom, 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 this is the information. So I think it also, just to make sure this is fair, that it kind of goes both sides, I just want to make sure to say to you as assessors, also work really hard to get to meet your 10 days. And I just want to be in fair disclosure. That was a really tough decision for me to make on the spot, but I did make it.
Thank you. Anything further? This concludes the Tax Commission meeting, and we will now turn it back over to Denny and to yes. Yes. I didn't hear a question there. I heard a statement. That's a statement. I don't know how to answer a statement.
That's a statement.
Okay.
And
it's one that I would probably take up to my former body, because I think that's something that the legislature really needs to focus on. Cheryl, you got a good point, Cheryl, but I just, unfortunately, we all elected them. They're the ones that have to make that decision. Thank you, Cheryl. Yes.
During your deliberation,
Chris, thank you.
Is the deliberation and the review independent, or do you do it as a group and then vote?
We do it as a group. We actually schedule deliberation time. We sit down with the administrative law judge and the commissioners. Sometimes the commissioner who is set in on the hearing will also be there. So we try to have at least three of us that have to sign And sometimes it's three of us deliberating, sometimes it's all four of us. Other questions, yes. And we're actually infringing on your time now because we said we'd be done. So we'll take questions as long as you've got them. And we'll even take statements from Cheryl as long as he wants to make them. Go ahead. I know who I would think. I probably signaled where I was at, simply because I thought the basement edition was warranting the higher value. That was my own opinion. Commissioner, anybody want to weigh in? They can.
I guess at this stage I would probably find against the taxpayer, but I don't know yet if I would raise the value from where the Board of Equalization is at. I'd have to spend more time looking at the documents and looking at the detail, but I don't think that the taxpayer met the burden of proof of establishing that his value was a better value.
In a residential case, so they don't start doing it, I would not recommend that you ask for an increase unless it's a situation where clearly we miss something like a basement or there's escape property, because you run into the issue that Commissioner Dixon pointed out, that you're losing your own presumption, which is not a good thing sometimes.
You might want to counsel your client on that topic.
They don't listen to me ever.
Okay.
The presumption is very, very strong, though, because when you have the Board of Equalization presumption, as was shown early on in the presentation, you get two parts you have to do to overcome that. So that's a big burden. And so for the counties, if you've got a BOE decision that is sort of in the ballpark, you probably ought to go hide behind that wall.
And uniformity is the back end of it.
Exactly.
You're kind of undercutting your own assessment system if you're saying we blew it. We didn't get anybody at fair market value.
Exactly. Commissioner Perrell? Commissioner Dixon.
You know, to be honest with you, I just like to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, listen to the testimony, go back through it. So I really can't give you an answer for that right now. I really just can't.
Again, thank you all. I don't want to infringe on Denny's time, because you have an assessor's meeting after this, and I want to make certain you have time to get there and get out of here. I know some of you have got a ways to have to drive today, too, so. There's nothing else. We'll go ahead and conclude the commission meeting, and I'll stop the record.